Good morning. Thanks for joining me on the Garden Show this morning. We're going to be looking at all the things going on in your landscape, discussing your trees and shrubs and lawns, flower beds, your vegetable gardens, and all those wonderful things that you do to keep you happy and to keep your lawn looking good and your landscape looking well. And if you have some questions or something that I can help you out with, maybe a question is it time to do this or is it too late? Is it time to plant this or is it too late? Timing is always very important when it comes to successful gardening. And so a lot of questions I get are about timing. What's the best time to do this or this or that gardening activity? So those kind of questions work out well as well. We did have a light freeze around the southeast Louisiana area with varying degrees of cold from community to community. But about the coldest it seems to have gotten is mostly around 30 degrees, give or take a degree. And we consider that a light freeze. And it does cause damage. It can cause damage under certain circumstances, although oftentimes it doesn't. And the damage, when it does cause damage, is usually relatively light. I think probably most in jeopardy would be warm season vegetables that you might have still had in your vegetable garden. And if you planted fall tomatoes, well, you certainly have your tomato plants still in your vegetable garden. And so you might have seen, if you weren't able to get out and cover them up, you might see some damage to the foliage. Not a complete collapsing and turning brown of the plant, but more of a sort of a browning maybe on the edges of the leaves or on the interior of the leaf. You'll see brown spots or brown areas, oftentimes in between the veins of the leaf. And that's a cold injury. And other vegetables, warm season vegetables, beans can show it, eggplants can show it. So warm season vegetables, if you weren't able to cover them, you might see some effect of the cold on their foliage, but it shouldn't have killed them. And the plants, if we get some mild weather and, you know, we don't have any more freezes in the near future, then they have a chance of recovering and continuing maybe to ripen up more tomatoes or produce more eggplants or beans for you. So play it by ear in the vegetable garden. All of the cool season vegetables, they just threw a party. They love this kind of weather. That's why we grow them this time of the year. So no worry there. Same thing with our cool season bedding plants. They're fine. They love this kind of weather. This is the kind of weather pansies and violas and petunias, snapdragons, dianthus, calendulas, alyssum. They've all been waiting for this wonderful cooler weather. So it's a great opportunity to add some of those to your flower beds. Still, don't let the cold set you back. Same thing with the vegetables. Feel free to continue to plant cool season vegetables in the landscape. Have you noticed the difficulty we have in describing this kind of weather that we just had? Because it was wintry weather. This is the kind of weather we call winter weather. When it gets down in the 30s in South Louisiana, well, that's winter for us. So here we are in November, firmly in what we call the fall season, having wintry weather. And it just shows us how sometimes how we divide up the seasons doesn't always make a lot of sense, and certainly not for gardeners. And so in gardening, what we typically do to avoid this kind of oddness about what occurs in what season and what's appropriate, y'all, it can be in the 70s at Christmas. Christmas is winter. So what are we doing having temperatures in the 70s in the winter times? That's just not winter-like. So what we gardeners oftentimes do, and what I try to teach when it comes to the seasons, is to call this the cool season. We transition into the cool season in October of the year. That's when it cools down and we lose that intense heat of summer. And it runs until March, the early part of April. And so during that period of time, during the cool season, it's defined by mild days to chilly days, and chilly to cold nights. During the cool season, we have a possibility of freezes. Freezes may occur. This was an early freeze for us. We typically don't get even light freezes here in the middle part of November. So this was an earlier freeze in the cool season than we would normally expect, but the cool season is defined by the possibility of freezes as well as the mild temperatures. So for somebody who calls this the cool season, the kind of weather we've been having, although it's early, is certainly to be expected during this time of the year. We don't have to say, well, it's actually fall, but it feels like winter right now. All we have to do is say it's the cool season, and we had a slightly earlier freeze than we typically expect to see during the cool season. And that just makes so much more sense as a gardener. This is how we garden. This is what determines what we're doing in our schedule. So think of the cool season as running from October until March or April, and you're in good shape. It's easy to say, oh, it's 70 degrees here in Christmas. And even though it's the cool season, we know during the cool season, although we do have freezes, much of the weather is mild, punctuated by those episodes of freezing temperatures. So again, understand what our cool season is like, relatively mild, but chilly to cool. We can have temperatures as high as the 70s and temperatures as low as the 20s. And anytime during that time, we just have to keep an eye out. All right, if you've got a gardening question for me this morning, I am here to answer them for you. Got some callers on the line. Call on in at 504-260-1870. I've got to take a quick break. Well, when I come back, we're going to start answering phone questions. Stay tuned. Thank you for joining me on the Garden Show this morning, talking gardening, and I hope you have something I can help you out with. That number to call if you've got a question for me is 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. Let's go to the phones and talk to Dan. Good morning, Dan. Thanks for calling in.
And how are you doing?
I'm real good. What can I do for you?
I have got a question. You're going to love this one. Got a watermelon question. I know you're thinking, come on, not him again.
What you got?
It's not an eating watermelon. 7 years ago, I was at Burden Plantation in Baton Rouge, and I was talking to Dr. Jeff Cooney, and we were talking bonsais and this and that, and I was walking through, and I seen a watermelon crepe myrtle, and it was a little sprout, just a little sprout on the ground. I said, Doc, I'm going to try that. He said, well, dig it up, put it in my pocket, went, planted it, put it in the back, and just forgot about it. 7 years it's been there. I found it, Dan. It's the most beautiful bonsai you ever seen in your life. It's about 20 inches tall. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's been there for 7 years. Now, you know, it needs repotted, no doubt. It's in about a 3-inch pot. The thing is gorgeous. Should I wait till this spring coming, or should I go ahead now to repot it to cut that taproot back? What do you think?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah. Has it rooted into the ground?
No.
It's just in the three-inch pot.
A bonsai pot. Yes, I'm going to take a picture of it. I'm going to email it to you. It's absolutely gorgeous. It really is.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
I love
bonsai, so that'll be fascinating to see.
Yes.
It's a good question. I'd be more inclined to tell you to fool with it in the spring going into the winter. That would be my inclination to do. And you're thinking about putting it into a slightly larger bonsai pot?
I'm thinking I should. You know, a little bit bigger than it's in right now. It's in one about like a 3 inches deep and about 14 inches long.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you, if the proportion of the pot is pleasing to the size of the bonsai, then you probably want to keep it in the same size pot. Moving it into a larger pot may throw it a bit out of scale. And it's not unusual at all for bonsai to go back into the same pot you know, time after time after time after doing a little root pruning and refurbishing the potting mix and doing a little top pruning, the trees can go back into the same container. And that confinement to that container is part of what achieves that dwarfing process. So you don't want to go into a much larger container, if at all, because that's going to stimulate more growth and it may get begin to lose its bonsai characteristics. So I'd leave it in the same size container. If it ain't broken, don't fix it. But maybe do a little root pruning and refurbish the potting mix. And I would do that maybe, when I say spring, I'm thinking maybe late February.
Oh, late February. Okay. Okay.
Sometime in March. Once the chances of freezes have, you know, pretty much gone by the wayside.
Well, it was a pleasant surprise when I found that. It was actually behind a shed, and you know, I'd put it in that pot years ago. It was no bigger than a straw, a soda straw, when I put it in there. And I said, well, this thing ain't going to do anything. So it just got put back there and forgot about it.
You take some pictures of it and send it around to your friends. I think that's gonna be something people be interested in.
I definitely will. And I was going to tell you something else. I think it was 3 years ago. I had me and Dr. Charlie Johnson was having a conversation one time, and your name came up, and I said, Doc, I said, what are we going to do when Dan Gill retires? He said, we're going to lose a good one. I had no idea you'd retired, Dan, from LSU.
I'm semi-retired. First day of June was my first day of semi-retirement. I've been continuing to do mass media work for the LSU Ag Center for the last 6 months while they did the search and the interviews and the selection of the new consumer horticulture specialist for Louisiana. Right. And that's far, far along. They've probably already chosen my successor at this point. And so they'll take over by the end of the year at the latest. And then I'll be fully retired after that.
But you still will be doing the radio programs. That's
not correct. I couldn't not do this radio program. I tell you, this is one of the things I love the most.
Well, we love to have you on there. And it's good talking with you. I'll get the pictures to you, and we'll go from there. I think you'll be surprised with it. Thank you so much.
I can't wait to see him. All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
That's going to be really fascinating. All right, we've got Dale up next, calling in from Biloxi. Hey, Dale, good morning.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Great, thanks. What you got?
I'm calling about the heliconia plant. I have some in the flower bed and some in a pot outside. When the cold weather affects it, will it come back in the spring?
It depends on how cold it gets, Dale. Did you notice they were damaged?
Just slightly from this recent cold weather we had.
And this was just a little quick light freeze. The heliconias are among the least cold sensitive of the beautiful tropicals that we use in our landscapes. Most tropicals this cold didn't even faze them. But heliconias are so tender, I would expect you to see some light damage on them. And that means that if it gets down in the upper 20s, it's going to be really damaging, probably take them down to the ground. And they usually die if we hit the mid-20s. Now, what you can do, Dale, is get you some mulch. And I typically prefer to use pine straw because it's a fluffy mulch. It traps a lot of air. And that air trapped in the mulch provides excellent insulation. And if you put 3 or 4 inches of pine straw over the rhizomes of the heliconias, then you can lose the tops. As long as the rhizomes stay alive, they'll pop up and grow again in the spring. So I would attempt to keep them going with a good thick mulch. Now, if you'd want to try to preserve the tops, then you can do that by covering them with cloth or plastic. The cover should extend all the way to the ground and be sealed, and you can cover them on those nights that it's going to get down to the low 30s or below to help minimize, you know, damage to the tops. But, you know, the tops are expendable. As long as you can keep those roots alive, they'll be back.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your help. I appreciate it.
Well, good luck, Dale. It's just the beginning. And if you find that your heliconias don't make it, and that really is unfortunately common, what some gardeners will do in this situation is in the spring they'll plant their heliconias in their pots. And it's done two ways. You either find a larger pot, a pot that's slightly larger than the pot your heliconia is in, and you sink that pot down into the ground where you want the heliconia to grow, and then you slip the slightly smaller pot down inside that pot, and that's how it lives for the summer. Water it as you need to, or you can simply put the pot itself down into the ground. And that means that with this freeze coming, what you would have done is actually lifted your heliconias up, trimmed off any roots that were growing out of the drainage holes, and then put them in a garage to keep them from being subjected to the cold. And that's just how tender they are. That's how cold sensitive they are, that if we want to grow them, oftentimes it's best for us to grow them in containers so that we can give them good protection. All right, thanks. Got to go to the news. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on the Garden Show. It's a chilly morning. We've had quite a cold week this week. There have been some light freezes around the area. I hope New Orleans kind of pretty much didn't see much from that. I didn't see much up here in the Baton Rouge area. I've got a variety of tropicals scattered around, so a little damage, if any, from the freeze. So, but this was a good thing. We like these early cold snaps are really help get our plants ready for the colder weather that will be coming later on. Our hardy shrubs like azaleas and camellias and Indian hawthorns, they need chilly weather in the fall to help them adjust and get themselves ready for the winter and get in their hardiness. And so we like to see these light freezes, chilly weather, because it's going to help our plants deal with the cold better later on. Tropicals have no hardiness, and so tropicals typically don't benefit all that much from this cold. They're not hardy to begin with, and they're going to freeze if it gets cold enough, even if we've had a previous colder weather. So that applies more to hardy plants, the adjustment and the reaction to the chilly weather we have, helping get them ready for the winter. Tropicals, if it gets cold enough, they're going to freeze anyway. We just have to deal with them as they come. Alrighty, let's head to the phones. We've got Mark calling in from Bush. Hey, Mark, good morning. You're on the Garden Show.
Oh, how you doing, Dan?
Good, what you got?
I got a question about two different trees. I have a couple of cooking pear trees that are about 15 to 20 feet tall, and I got a couple of plum trees that are about 10 feet tall. But they have straggly limbs, and this past fruit-bearing season, a few of the branches actually snapped because of the weight of the fruit. And I was wondering if this is a good time to trim them out so that they won't do that next time.
Well, pruning of fruit trees is generally done in the late winter, plums and pears. But you can really do the pruning anytime after they've dropped all of their leaves and gone completely dormant. And it's easier just to do it in late winter to make sure the trees have gotten completely dormant. So there's no hurry to do it. It's still a little early at this point. Anyway, so sometime in mid to late December, January, you can get out there, study the trees carefully, decide exactly what you're trying to accomplish and where you need to prune them to accomplish that. Be careful with the pear. We don't go in and cut pears back hard at some point, as you may be anticipating, to get rid of long branches. If you cut a pear back severely and do a lot of hard pruning on it, the new growth that's stimulated, the abundant, lush new growth that you stimulate, oftentimes gets really ravaged by fire blight, a bacterial disease. So keep your pruning, you know, to as little as possible, but do identify the branches you think would be most prone to breakage. You can shorten those. In the future, if you see a branch that's stressed out and bending a lot, try propping it up with a board or tying it up into the tree with a rope to give it some support is another option. But again, do your pruning while the trees are dormant. Have a good, clear idea in mind about what you're trying to accomplish, and then prune accordingly.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
All righty, Mark. Good luck with that. All righty. Next caller up we got is Ann calling from Missouri. Ann, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. I have, I said I had dwarf palms, but I have pygmy palms, and which I planted late spring, and they did beautifully. But I noticed that they have now the lower fronds are turning yellow, and I don't know if that's just attrition or.
Let's assume it's attrition.
And this, I'm sorry?
I said, let's assume it's attrition.
Because it really seemed to, they've grown well. They seem to like it there, but then, and this was before the cold snap.
Well, see,
you know, this is happening.
Attrition is the natural loss of the lower fronds.
Okay.
Emphasis on natural. Natural. So, as the palm grows, it sends out fresh new young leaves, and the older leaves eventually get old and die. So, on a perfectly healthy palm, you see new leaves coming out the top. You see mature leaves and young leaves forming the major middle part of the canopy. And then you see the oldest leaves down at the bottom that may begin to turn yellow or get brown edges and beginning to show signs of age. And when they become sufficiently unattractive, they're pruned off. And so that's what you're going to want to do. If they're suitably unattractive now, where they're really dragging down the appearance of the palm tree, you can go ahead and prune them off. If they're just showing a light yellowing or a few spots and stuff, leave them until you feel like you need to, and then take them off then. Now, if this continues to march up the palm, then it's an issue, then there's a problem. Don't forget, we lost a lot of date palms last winter to the
infections
that we had. So don't forget now you know date palms, pygmy date palms, may not make it through the winter. So now you know they're an unreliable palm to plant. They're not reliably cold hardy. But while yours are still small, do everything you can to cover and protect that palm if we're going to get down into the low 20s in particular, because temperatures in the low 20s, certainly, if we should hit 20 or even the upper teens, those date palms, those little pygmy date palms, they just can't hardly make it through.
Right. Okay, well, that released my mind. Thank you so much.
Good deal, Ann. Take care now.
Okay.
All righty, and folks, tropicals should really be on your mind right now as far as this light freeze we had should be waking you up to the coming cool weather and freezes we're going to be having, and thinking about how you're going to deal with some of your tender plants like pygmy date palms in your landscapes. Time to take a break, but y'all do stay tuned. We've got lots more Garden Show, gardening information, and gardening questions coming your way right after this. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you got something I can help you out with, don't let the program go by without getting that information you need to make your plants grow as good as you want them to. That phone number to call, once again, 504-260-1870, and I'll be happy to help you out. We're talking to Donald, calling him from Hammond. Good morning, Donald. What can I do for you?
Good morning. Glad to hear the show this morning. The man was talking about pear trees. I have trouble. I've been wondering where you can even find that. I mean, to me, that's the native eating pear here in Louisiana. But any pears you see in a fruit place, it isn't that kind of a pear, like a tree to buy. I'm wondering where you can find these trees at.
And you're asking for an eating pear, Donald.
Well, you cook them. It's a cooking pear.
Okay, well, kind of think of it, although they're sort of interchangeable. There are certain pears that are better for fresh eating and certain pears that are really excellent for cooking. Ayers, for instance, is a good fresh eating pear. Pineapple, on the other hand, is not very good for fresh eating at all, but makes a superb canning pear for canning pears or pear butter or whatever you want to do with it. Now, what I suggest you do, Donald, is go online, go to your search engine, and type in LSU Ag Center Home Orchard. LSU Ag Center, Home Orchard. We have a superb reference online. And that Home Orchard book is just chock full of information on growing a backyard orchard of all different kinds of fruit trees. And in it, you will find the listing of cultivars or varieties that we recommend for Louisiana. And you'll find the pears listed that are recommended. And they'll indicate whether they're for North Louisiana, South Louisiana, whether they're a good eating pear, whether they're more of a cooking pear. And once you look at the cultivars, then check with your local nurseries. Usually in spring, around about February and March, the nurseries have a very good selection of fruit trees and shrubs for people to plant. You may even find them now in the nursery. So local nurseries do carry pear trees, and they typically carry the varieties that the LSU Ag Center recommends.
Okay, because the only ones I usually see, of course, I'm just looking at like Lowe's or Walmart, and they have
Don't go. Go to your local nurseries and garden centers.
Yeah. Okay.
Donald.
All right.
Go to your local nurseries and garden centers.
Does that Home Orchard book, does it have the pictures of the trees? Because I know, just looking at the tree, I know what I'm looking for.
Well, you know, you mean you know what the pear tree looks like?
Yeah.
Well, pear trees look like pear trees.
No, I know, but I mean, different pears look different, and I know the pear,
well,
the look of
Donald,
the one that
the fruit
I want.
Does. The fruit does, but the trees don't. So, again, what you can do is there's not a lot of color photographs in the book. Let me just jump to that and tell you that. What you can do, however, Donald, is just go back online, very easy to do, and say, look, I want to see what an Ayers pear looks like. So do a search for Ayers pear and pull up the photographs. Boom, there's pictures of Ayers pears. So, I mean, it's certainly possible for you to take those pear names, the variety names, and do more research on each of them, finding out what they look like and other more detailed information than what you might find in the Home Orchard. Got to scoot.
That's a good idea.
Donald.
Appreciate that.
You take care now. All right, folks, we'll be back with more of The Garden Show. Y'all. Good morning. It's a beautiful day out there. I tell you what, it'd be nice to get out in the yard. And it feels a little chilly at first, but once you get working, you start getting warm. All right, let's head to the phones. We got Jerry calling in from Hammond. Jerry, good morning.
Hello.
Hello, Jerry. What can I do for you?
Yes, sir. Like you say, it's a beautiful morning. So I have a satsuma tree down south Louisiana around Chalmette. When I pick the fruit out of it, half of it is perfect, delicious, juicy, but the other half is stringy and dry. What causes that?
It's a condition called puffy fruit. Is half of it kind of puffed out a little bit?
Yeah, and it's dry, and there's hardly any juice in it at all, and the other side is perfect.
It's a condition of satsumas. Other citrus don't do it. It is called puffy fruit. We're not always sure exactly why. It's more common on younger trees the first 5 or 6 years after you plant a satsuma. It's more likely to make puffy fruit during those first 5 or 6 years in the ground. And it usually just stops. So as the trees get older and better established, it just stops. This isn't something you really have any control over. On older trees, we also sometimes see some puffy fruit. And it's suspected that that occurs when a satsuma tree blooms late in the spring, once it's begun to warm up and the flowers come out during warm conditions. And that affects them and leads to some puffy fruit. All you can really do, Jerry, is to enjoy the good half and then just discard the bad half in your compost pile and try to save the best ones for your friends if you give any away.
Okay,
but,
that's perfect.
There's nothing you can do. Sometimes you're going to find fruit that are totally puffy. You know, there's not any good in them at all. So it's just one of them things. It's something the tree itself is doing, but it's something that definitely should get better over time.
Can you tell me my maintenance for the satsuma tree beginning in January? When you fertilize them, when you spray for the bugs?
In late January or early February, you can fertilize the tree with either a general purpose fertilizer you may have on hand, follow label directions, or you can go to your local nursery and get a citrus tree fertilizer and again apply that per label directions. That's really about all. If you need to do any pruning on the tree, Pruning in late February or March is the preferred time. And remember, the more you prune on a citrus, the more you reduce the harvest. So always have a good, clear idea in mind. You may be taking lower branches off so the canopy is up higher, or pruning back really wild branches, something along those lines. But keep your pruning to a minimum. Have a good reason for doing it. Watch out for pest problems through the year. Generally speaking, we just do pest problems as they go.
Yeah, I had some black fungus looking on some of the fruit and some of the leaves. I think you got to spray early for that.
Yeah, for the dark colored skin on the fruit, that's citrus rust mite, and you need to spray in the summer for that. I tell people to begin spraying a light oil spray in June, repeat it in July, and make a third application in August, and that usually keeps the fruit nice and clean.
Okay.
The LSU Ag Center has a great publication online. If you do LSU Ag Center Home Citrus in your search engine, great book, color photographs, all the insects and diseases, all the cultural information. Go find that book. It's an excellent one for you. All righty, Jerry, thanks a lot. And folks, we're coming down to the end of our first hour, but y'all stay tuned. Got a whole another hour of the Garden Show coming your way right here on. This is the second hour of the show, and always have a good first hour and expect to get even more calls in the second hour. If you're listening, beginning to tune in, take a sip of your coffee and think about what's going on in your landscape. And if there's something you have a question about that I can help you out with, whether it's the time to plant something or perhaps not, pest problems that you might be observing from insects to diseases and weeds. None of the pests take the winter off down here, so we still have issues all through the winter season. Lawn issues, vegetable garden questions, or questions about your flower beds, your herb gardens, problems with your indoor plants. As I love to say, if it's green and growing, I'm here to get you the information you need to make those plants grow as good as you want them to. And that phone number to call is 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. And I'll be happy to do my best to answer those questions for you. The cold weather and the recent light freeze is probably the biggest news that we have in gardening right now. And it's a good idea to walk around your landscape and look for damage to tropicals. I was probably most concerned about tender, warm-season vegetables like tomatoes and eggplants and snap beans. They're very sensitive to the cold. Some of the summer bedding plants, coleuses, are very sensitive to the cold, and you may very well see damage to coleus, even though, again, this was a light freeze that didn't bother a whole lot of plants. Evaluate those, and some of those plants that are looking bad at this point, particularly bedding plants like coleus, most of the time we just pull those out, put them in our compost pile, and where the coleus are growing, you can plant some cool season bedding plants instead of looking ugly through the winter like the coleus would have, and then probably not even surviving the winter. You would have a nice, beautiful bed full of dianthus, for instance. So once the summer bedding plants start going downhill, I'm not a big fan of cutting those back and see if you can nurse them through the winter. You planted that flower bed to look beautiful. You don't want to look ugly all winter long, nursing periwinkles or blue days or coleuses or something along those lines through the winter, only to watch them die in a severe freeze. So bite the bullet and move on to the beautiful cool season bedding plants that will keep those flower beds looking gorgeous and colorful through the fall, winter, and well into the spring, where they'll usually put on a really beautiful display. So keep in mind, evaluate things as a result of this light freeze, but I don't expect you're going to see a humongous amount of damage, certainly not catastrophic damage like we saw last year with temperatures in the teens. So do a little cleaning up, but again, let this remind you that freezes are on their way. We're going to have another one for weeks. This one was relatively early. Or we may have some more freezes within a couple of weeks. So you never know what the winter is going to bring here, what kind of temperatures are going to be coming. But we know it's going to be chilly, and we know we're probably going to have some substantial freezes, temperatures in the 20s most likely. So this is a great time. Just think about last spring and all those damaged tropicals you saw. You know the procedure. And you might not even have as many tropicals as you had before. You might have cut down on the number of tropicals in your landscape as a result of the massive damage that we saw last year January in those terrible freezes. So let this go ahead and remind you that think about what you want to protect, how you intend to protect it, plants in containers. Are you going to bring them inside for the winter or bring them in and out? I talk to people sometimes and they're worried about bringing a tropical plant in a container in the house on the night it's going to freeze and then put it back outside. It's like, well, will I shock the plant? You know, bringing it in, putting it out, bringing it in, putting it out. You won't. They don't mind in the least spending a night or two inside while the freezes are going on, and then they really love to be put back outside again. You can oftentimes, as long as you're careful to bring them in when it freezes, you can often keep container tropicals that you use to embellish your deck and your porches and your patios. You can oftentimes get them through the winter in better shape and happier if you move them in and out. So they spend most of their time outside where they enjoy the light and the air movement, the humidity, rather than inside. But if you don't have the wherewithal, sometimes it's hard to move larger pots in particular in and out. This is the time to be moving your tropicals that you intend to keep inside all winter. This is the time that you need to be doing that because more cold weather is on the way. And do make sure that you move them to a really brightly lit location right by a window, right in front of a window or right in front of a glass door, not in the vicinity and not across the room from it, but right smack dab in that window where it gets as much light as it possibly can. And even still, you can expect them sometimes to express their unhappiness about being brought inside. You may see leaves dropping. You may see brown leaf edges. Just be aware they're not as happy oftentimes indoors. And also, don't forget to adjust your watering. Typically, we have to water in water container plants more often outside than we do inside. So don't forget to adjust your watering. Stick your finger down in the soil. Wait until it begins to feel decidedly dry in the upper inch or two before you water. And other than that, just plenty of light, water properly, and bringing plants inside for the winter can work out well. But honestly, if you don't mind moving them in and out, they really respond quite well to that. So wintry weather, the cool season is here, and we can expect to see chilly weather and freezes interspersed with stretches of wonderfully mild weather from now all the way until the end of February, early part of March. Again, welcome to the cool season. All right, y'all, if you've got a gardening question, that's what I'm here for today. That phone number to call is 504-260-1870. Give me a call. I'll be happy to answer your questions. Right now, we'll take a quick break and be right back. Good morning. Thanks for tuning in. And now you got a call. If you have a gardening question, it's 504-260-1870. I'll be happy to help you out with what you got going. 504-260-1870. Up right now, Bonnie is calling in from Houma. Bonnie, good morning.
Hello.
Hey, Bonnie, what can I do for you?
Hello.
Hello, Bonnie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, what can I do for you?
I was calling about the swamp magnolia. I don't know if you're familiar with it. They grow wild out in the woods. I was wondering when's the best time to dig one up. And they are evergreen, right?
Well, I think you're probably talking about the Sweet Bay magnolia, Magnolia virginiana. It has a silver back to the leaves.
Yes.
Okay. They come in two forms, and you may see both growing in the wild. There's an evergreen form that is more common here in the deep south, and then as you move further north, in central and north Louisiana, they tend to be more deciduous. So as you go into colder winters, they tend to be more deciduous. Here in the coastal area, they, there's a variety or cultivar, a variety that tends to be more evergreen. So what I would recommend you do, Bonnie, to make sure you get an evergreen tree, and also because of the time of transplanting, wait until late December or early January. December or early January, and dig the tree up. Then if it's got plenty of leaves on it, then you're getting an evergreen form of the tree. Now, Bonnie, remember, younger, smaller trees are going to move the easiest and the best. So in an effort to move something that's going to be nice and big, don't fall into the trap of trying to move a large tree. It's oftentimes just too hard to get enough of the root system for them to survive. And magnolias can be very fussy about their roots. So I'd recommend you stick with trees that are under 10 feet or less to try to move. And the smaller, the better, basically, for success.
Okay. And how do they grow? What's that growing rate?
Well, your tree isn't going to grow very fast because it's going to be transplanted, and that's going to set it back. So don't expect it to grow like gangbusters for the first couple, 3 years as it settles in. But they have a moderate to fast rate of growth once they catch. I have one that looked like it took off like a skyrocket for a couple of years. So they have a pretty good rate of growth. Beautiful flowers, fragrant during the summertime, smell like beautiful magnolia flowers, beautiful foliage. This tree is a Louisiana superplant. Named a superplant by the LSU Ag Center, which indicates it's especially beautiful, well-adapted to our climates, and an excellent choice for planting in your landscape.
All righty. I will try to dig one up. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Bonnie. All righty. The next caller up is Ann, calling in from Gentilly. Hey, Ann, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. I have a question about atrazine. Is it too late to put it down for the fall application?
It is not, Anne. Atrazine has post herbicidal activity, and that means that you can apply it to actively growing weeds, and it will kill those actively growing weeds. Atrazine also leaves behind residue in the soil that suppresses the growth of weed seeds. So it also gives you some pre-emergence activity as well. But because it is effective against actively growing weeds, it's not too late to use it. You can use that now to deal with weeds that you see growing in your lawn. And if you, I'd evaluate the lawn again maybe around about January or early February. And again, if you see a fair amount of cool season weeds growing in the lawn at that time, you can use the atrazine again.
Okay, very good. The other question I have, I think it's a mushroom, I'm not sure, started growing in the area maybe about 3 years ago. It's spherical. It's about the size of a golf ball or even slightly larger. It tends to grow where there's bare soil but dampness. And the way I notice it is that I'll see, excuse me, a lump in the soil, and apparently half of the sphere is below ground, the other half is above ground. So I just take a weeder and take it up, throw it away. Yesterday I split one open for the first time and saw that it's black inside. So I don't know what it is, and I wondered if you might be able to.
It is a mushroom, and even though it doesn't have a stem on it, the way you normally think of a mushroom with a stem and a cap,
right?
This is a mushroom that belongs to the group we call puffballs.
Oh.
And those fungi produce mushrooms that are just round spheres.
Right.
When they're fully mature, a little hole opens in the top, and the outer side dries kind of to a leathery texture. And as you walk by, you might step on it, and this cloud of spores will come out of the opening at the top.
Yes, that's happened in the past, yes.
Well, that's,
it looks like
that's
a flower that has opened, and it's blackish, darkish.
Yeah, so So these puffballs are just mushrooms.
Okay.
Don't worry about them. If you see one, collect it, throw it away, and ignore them. And no big deal.
Okay. I think this is a Katrina gift because I didn't have these until about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, life would be boring if we didn't have new things coming in.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. You have a nice Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much now.
All right, Ann. You too now. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alrighty, up next, we've got Peggy on the line, and she's calling in from Plaquemine. Hey, Peggy, good morning.
Hi, how you doing? I have a question about a fig tree. I had one that looked like totally died last winter, and then it came up really late, like May. And I was wondering, does the fig trees have to be grafted? So is it going to be good even though it came right from the ground?
What kind of a fruit tree?
Fig, I'm sorry.
Oh, fig. Fig trees are not grafted.
Oh, okay.
Now, they're also pretty hardy, so I wouldn't have expected a fig tree to go down last winter, even though we hit the teens. Be that as it may, if it did, if it sprouted up from the base, that's still the fig, because figs are grown on their own roots. They're not grafted, so that's still your good fig. So it made it through, but you might be paranoid now about it. Since it seemed to have frozen back. But honestly, we grow figs all the way up into North Louisiana, South Arkansas, and they hold up through the winter. So I'm not sure what killed it back last year, and it could have been the cold, but normally they're hardy, so don't be overly paranoid about it.
Oh, that's good. And so I heard you also say maybe in the past that if I wanted to get a piece of one, whatever, you would just cut it and put it in the ground and try to grow
figs,
it?
Figs grow very easily from dormant hardwood cuttings. Now, dormant means it doesn't have any leaves on it, and hardwood means it's last year's growth that has matured and gotten woody. And we take those cuttings in late February from the tips of the branches. The cuttings should be 10 to 12 inches long. You can plant one cutting in a pot or several cuttings in one pot. Use potting soil. Bury the cutting one half its length down in the potting soil. So if the cutting is 12 inches, 6 inches of the cutting go down in the potting soil. Put them in a area where they will not be subjected to freezing temperatures. They don't need light, there's no leaves, but do make sure they're protected. And then when they begin to send out leaves, move them to a sunny location outside. They root very reliably that way, and that's a real successful way of propagating figs.
And can you do that with any other fig tree? I mean, any other fruit tree?
All figs. All figs.
Just figs, not other fruit
trees? All figs. Got a news break, Peggy. You take care, and I'll talk to you later. Folks, we got the CBS News update, then Don Ames in with WWL First News. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you've got something I can help you out with, don't be shy. Feel free to call on in and get your gardening question answered this morning. That phone number to call is 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. I'm Dan Gill, retired professor with the LSU Ag Center, answering your gardening questions this morning. And let's head back to the phones. We got Dan calling in from Metairie. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, Dan. How you been?
Fine, thank you. Don't be saying you're retired. You sound like an old man.
Well, I feel like an old man. What you got?
I have a night blooming cirrus. It fell down because I had too much cirrus and not enough pot. And it's in several pieces. Someone told me my cirrus is not a cactus. That's how I've been growing it. But a vine, is that correct?
No, that is incorrect. The night blooming cirrus is a cactus, but it does have a vining growth habit. The fact that a plant is a vine simply means it grows long shoots and tends to clamber or climb around or run on the ground. So vine is just a generic term for how a plant grows. It has nothing to do with what the plant is, what the name of it is. So it's inappropriate to say it's not a cactus, it's a vine. It can be both a cactus and a vine. And we definitely have vining cactuses. And the night blooming cirrus is a good example. In the wild, it lives in trees, and it sort of scabbards around the trees. It grows over the branches, grows up and drapes over another branch, and kind of just scrambles around in the tree. So it is actually a true cactus, however, Dan, a member of the cactus family.
And what would the best soils be?
Well, it's not a cactus that's native to the desert. This is a cactus that's native to rainforest or forested areas, but it lives in the trees where rainwater drains rapidly, and so it's not accustomed to being grown in, you know, really wet soil. We typically grow them in relatively small pots for their size because they don't have huge root systems. They usually root out in little pockets in the tree branches, so they're not used to having a lot of root room, so we grow them in relatively small pots. And then just let them ramble and keep under control. They don't like full sun all day long, which, again, is in keeping with their forest environment. They're not on the floor of a desert getting beaten by the sun all day. They're in a forest where the sun comes through the canopy. So they like some sun during the day, but then some shade. We usually give them morning sun and afternoon shade, or vice versa. But that's why we don't give them sun all day, because they're not native to the desert where they would, you know, be subjected to that much sun.
Dan, I've been growing these things for 20 years, and I learned more today than I did in the last 20 years.
Oh, and we've been growing night-blooming cereus on our front porches in New Orleans for so many generations. It's really just one of those traditional, wonderful plants that we love. Enjoy it, Dan.
Thank you, son. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. All righty, you too. All right, Dorothy, calling in from Braithway, is up next. Dorothy, good morning.
Good morning.
What can I do for you?
I have a rubber tree plant. I've had it for like about 3 or 4 years. It's about 5 feet tall, and it's got like 7 branches, and they're all leaning over. But at the base, it's beginning to have new shoots. Can I cut the branches off that are bending over?
Yes.
How you far prune, down can
you,
I go?
You can prune that plant however you want to, Dorothy, to make sure it's the shape and size that you find pleasing. Think about what you're trying to accomplish, exactly what you're trying to accomplish. What do you want the plant to do? Because when you start pruning on it, you're going to start telling it to do some things. And you need to be careful and aware of what you're telling it to do and make sure it grows the way you want it to. But by all means, the new shoots that are coming out from the base, they should continue to grow and develop. And so if you want to rely more on those to grow your rubber plant, and you want to cut back some of the other maybe floppy branches that aren't as attractive, feel free to do that.
Okay. Well, they're about maybe 2 feet toward the top is where all the green leaves are, and the rest of it's barren. And I just want it to grow and be pretty. That's all. I've got ivy that I've had for 52 years.
Dorothy, they are trees. So it's in their nature to have a trunk.
Okay.
So when they're young, sometimes they'll keep their foliage to the ground. But it's not unusual for them to drop their lower leaves and look more like a tree. That's actually what they want to be when they grow up. But again, if you got new growth from the base, that's going to help fill in that lower part of the tree. Whether you cut the top back any or not, that new growth should come out and help fill in that lower part of the tree for you.
Okay. If will there be any more growth to the branches that I cut?
Oh, yes, if you cut them back to the trunk and remove them, no, that's it. That branch is gone. But if you shorten a branch where you cut it, you should see new sprouts come out from that stump, and that will, again, grow back out and help fill in the tree.
Okay. I'll have a second thought on that now.
Well, take your time and make a cut here. See how it does. Make a cut there. Just take your time. And make sure you're comfortable about what you're doing, and then go for it. It's kind of a nerve-wracking to do, to prune on a plant, but you can't kill it. You're not going to kill it by pruning on it, and hopefully it'll turn out the way you want it to.
That's what I was worried about, killing it. I don't like to kill plants.
No, it'll survive the pruning, I guarantee.
Ivies are pretty sturdy, too. I've had one that was It's 52 years old. It survived Katrina upside down for 2 weeks in muddy water.
Oh, wow. Boy, that becomes an old friend. I tell you what,
Yes. That's
not a plant anymore. That's an old friend. Well, Dorothy, thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. All right, folks, stay tuned. Taking a break, but we'll be right back. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and let's go right back to the phones. The next gardener we have up is Roy, calling in from Madisonville. Roy, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I got a question on some red maples that I had went and bought from a reputable business, and one of them never did anything. It looked pretty there the first time I put it up and had it, you know, put in, and it never grew again, okay? And then it died. Everything just died on it. And I got another one that's probably 100 feet away, maybe less, and it's doing just fine, okay? And I'm trying to – how do you distinguish a red maple – like this time of year, shouldn't it be turning red?
Well, we don't get much fall color down here, Roy. The term red maple doesn't give its name because it turns red down here. So don't expect your tree to turn into a flaming red bonfire in the fall. You may get some color on it. Our fall color usually shows up in late November, early December. Is when most of the color begins to show up, but it's generally not spectacular. And red maples are not known to be particularly, certainly our native swamp red maples are not known to be particularly brilliant. Now, there are some northern cultivars that are more highly colored, and they have their issues down here. They're not quite as reliable for us as our native swamp red maple. Depending on the year, if the weather is right, sometimes they will color up nicely. But again, color is unpredictable down here. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't, depending on weather conditions. But it's never really as spectacular as what you see up north.
Okay. So I put these trees in the ground, and one died. We already established that. And now I have not trimmed this tree since I had it. This is my second year, okay? And I want to know when the proper time is to go ahead and try to shape it. You know, like cut the
Well, you don't need to do a whole lot of shaping. Generally, Roy, all you need to do is take off the lower branches gradually as the tree grows. The tree's going to retain its lower branches. So as the tree grows taller, prune off those lower branches to raise the canopy of the tree up to the desired height. And usually you want to maintain a proportion of about two-thirds leafy canopy to one-third bare trunk. And just keep doing that over the years until you've lifted the canopy up to the height you want it to be.
Is there a proper time of the year to do that?
Generally, when the tree's leafless, it's easiest. You don't have you can see the structure of the tree more easily. You don't have the weight of the leaves to deal with. So prune in winter when the tree's leafless. Avoid pruning in spring around about March because of the maples bleed more when they're pruned in the spring. So a winter pruning is a good idea.
All right, I got one more question. I'll let you go. On a tree that is live and looking good, it's obviously getting colder, and I'm getting these black spots on my leaves, okay, on a couple of my leaves, and they're really like being the size of a quarter. And I'm wondering if that's a disease or something, or it's just the winter.
It could be a fungal disease, Roy, but, you know, it's November. The leaves will be dropping in a short period of time. There's no reason to be concerned.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to let you know, man, I've been listening to you for years and years and years, and I just love your show, okay? Thank
Roy,
you so very much.
I appreciate you calling in.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Thanks. All right, folks, I see we got to take a quick break, but if y'all are hanging on, try to hang in there, and we'll be back right after this. Well, folks, good morning, and we're talking gardening. Let's go right to the phones. Getting down to the wire here, we got Dennis on the line from Slidell. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing great. What you got?
Good. I got a large tree in my front yard that has a big white mold on the bottom of it.
When you say on the bottom, do you mean on the base of the trunk?
On the base of the trunk, yes.
It seems like it's growing up from the ground and covering the base of the trunk?
It appears that way, yes.
It could be a sign of a bad fungal infection, Dennis. I'd recommend you, hypoxylin grows up on trees like that. I would recommend you get that looked at just to make sure nothing is going wrong. How does the tree look?
Tree looks fine. I mean, it bloomed well, this year and everything.
The good news would be this is a harmless fungus. Bad news would be that it's something actually attacking the tree. Have you tried just to remove the fungus?
It's very difficult to get it off. I got one piece off, but I haven't gotten the rest of it off.
All right. That's attacking the tree, Dennis. I'd recommend you get a licensed arborist out to look at that. Unfortunately, you have some time. There's no real rush on this. But unfortunately, eventually, that fungus may lead to decay in the trunk of that tree, which would lead to removal. Now, that's not something that's going to happen tomorrow. But it's something you need to get looked into, Dennis. So get a licensed arborist out there.
Should I try to remove it?
No.
Take a shovel.
I just wanted
it?
To know how easy it was to remove. The fact that it is stuck firmly on the tree is a bad sign, indicating it's probably attacking the tree.
Okay. All right.
Sorry for the bad news.
Yeah.
All right, Dennis.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Sure thing.
Bye.
All right. We got Don on. Don?
Yeah, Dan. Hey, this is Don.
Don, I understand you're looking for some guguza seeds, and you may have gone online trying to find them without any luck because you don't know how to spell it. Because how we spell it is different from the way we pronounce it. So do you have a pencil?
Well, yeah, I have the what I did is I had some gugutzas. I took the seeds out of them, dried them out, and planted them into a pot. And two of the seeds started to bloom or grow, whatever you want to call it. But the other ones are not growing at all. That's in several other pots.
Is Don,
it too early?
You can't start seeds now. We're going into the winter. Why would you start seeds for that now?
Well, I was just going to keep it inside and bring it outside when it was warm, but that's not a good time.
No. Just, Don, put the rest of your seeds in a jar, stick them in the refrigerator, and then wait and plant them out next year in March or April. This is a warm season vegetable. You can't grow it inside, and you can't grow it outside over the winter. So, again, I don't know what you want to do with the seedlings you got. They're really not worth anything.
Okay.
Save the seeds and plant them in the spring.
I got one more question.
Don, I am so sorry. I just ran out of time right here at the end of the show, but I appreciate you calling, and I hope you get a good crop of guguza next year. Folks, thanks for everybody that called in this morning. Have a great time in your garden on this beautiful weekend, and I'll see y'all again next Saturday. Happy Thanksgiving.